pull the rug from underneath your feet. Never knew that life could be so discreet. Something in your eyes tells me it'll be alright.
Daniel's journey into the world of science and nutrition marked the beginning of his extensive knowledge in these fields. Although his initial aspiration was to become a chiropractor, he made the decision to pursue natural medicine instead. This choice eventually led him to becoming a tutor at the college where he studied, and later on, he transitioned into a role as a senior lecturer while also managing a busy clinic. However, in 2022, Daniel made the difficult choice to leave lecturing behind. He disagreed with the teachings that were being relayed to students who were eager to learn all about authentic natural medicine. This pivotal moment prompted him to delve deeper into the subject and explore what was truly happening in the world of natural medicine today. With the recent release of his book, Can You Catch a Cold? Untold History and Human Experiments, Daniel has become a respected authority on the topic. It is my pleasure to welcome him today. Hi, Daniel. How are you?
Good, thanks, Tanya. How are you?
Yeah, it's good. It's so nice to catch up with you. I'm so excited to hear about your story, especially the fact that you have a new book called Can You Catch a Cold that's coming out. But I would like to hear about, you know, what got you here, where you are today. First of all, can we start off with what's one thing that you like to do that sets you up for the day for your health and happiness?
Yeah, one thing that I usually do when I first wake up in the morning is do deep breathing. I haven't been doing that so much over the last few weeks because I've been doing really long hours getting my book finally released. So that has totally consumed me, and the deep breathing, unfortunately, has taken a back seat. But now I've actually got some time to breathe, literally time to breathe. I will start doing that again every morning. I find it really sets me up for the day.
And how come you decide to do breathing, and how long do you do your breathing for?
I was trying to overcome a health problem, and I got into this in about 2018, maybe early 2019, and I found it really helped while I was working a really stressful full-time job and trying to hold down a clinic work and doing lots of other things. As soon as I started doing this every morning, I found that I was able to manage stress a lot better and my symptoms weren't as bad. And I kept doing that every day, and it was great. And I think I'll probably do it for the rest of my life.
It's amazing, actually, because a lot of part of my work is based on a breathing process that we teach, and we teach that in our quantum courses. And it's a breathing process. And we just teach people to actually start a very simple breathing process at the start of the day. And I delved into this about 3 years ago, and now that I've been teaching it, but the results have been amazing, not only in my life, but all the clients have just given me so much feedback that even today I had an amazing outcome just through using the breathing with this client who came back today. So I really agree with you that it is really phenomenal in a lot of the ways. Such a simple process, isn't it?
Yeah, we need oxygen to live, right? And most people don't breathe properly. They're breathing with their chest rather than their diaphragm and deeply into the abdomen. And they're in this sort of fight and flight response all day.
Yeah.
Body deteriorates. And as soon as you change the way you breathe, it changes the way your body functions and the way it feels and responds. So, yeah, this is something that I've known about and done fairly consistently for most of my life with a martial arts background, but never really did it religiously every morning. It was more so doing it at training maybe 3 or 4 times a week, but now it's usually every morning. And as I said, I'll never look back.
That's wonderful. So let's dive in and find out about all about you and where you've come from and what led you to where you are today, and you know, your extensive knowledge in nutrition and science. And you know, I have a great fascination in, you know, biochemistry, anatomy. So, you know, I I get very excited about these topics. And I know you've got a book that's released called Can You Catch a Cold? The
Yes.
Untold History from Human Experiments. Is that right?
Yeah,
Yeah.
untold history and human experiments. That's
Oh,
right.
that, yeah, that's exciting. So, yeah. So, how did it all begin?
For me, I wanted to be a chiropractor growing up, and they didn't offer it in Brisbane, in the city that I lived in.
Oh,
So
really?
I looked, yeah, it was only in Victoria and Sydney. And I looked for something close to that, something alternative, and got myself into natural medicine. Did an undergraduate's degree, a bachelor degree. And then after I graduated, got approached by the college that I studied at to do some tutoring there.
Yep.
And tutored there for a few years, moved into lecturing, and then eventually became a senior lecturer. And whilst doing that, had my own clinical practice for maybe 10, 12 years, and recently quit that senior lecturer job in 2000 and end of 2002, just because I didn't agree with what was being taught
Yeah.
and couldn't bring myself to continue teaching things that I didn't believe in to students who were interested in learning about real natural medicine.
Wow, that's amazing. So how much integrity that you have was to leave a job that really didn't align with what you were teaching? Because so many people would just stick it through and, tell the lie or, not live with integrity. So, but what were some of the key elements that made you feel like that you weren't living or, working in an industry that was aligned with the truth?
Getting reprimanded for teaching naturopathic philosophy to students in a naturopathic and nutritional medicine program.
Yeah.
That for me was the straw that broke the camel's back, and realized that what's happening to natural medicine in Australia and around the world is a systematic destruction of the fundamentals and foundational principles of natural medicine.
So what are some of these foundational principles that you're talking about?
Well, the fact that the body can heal itself.
Yeah,
It's a
which is
self-healing
natural
entity.
medicine. Yeah.
Yeah. And all that the body needs to heal itself are some very basic things. And if those basic needs aren't met, the body will be in a state of dis-ease. So you have to give the body what it needs, take away what it doesn't, and it will do the rest. It's not rocket science. It's not. The entire field has been corrupted to the point where all clinicians are so confused and they feel like they need to do fancy tests and give expensive supplements. And disease is a big mystery. We don't know why you've got it and we don't know how to cure it. Nothing can be cured, it can only be managed. And all the important basic principles don't matter because the answer lies in the bottom of an expensive pill bottle or some kind of fancy intervention or some kind of expensive test. And I agreed with none of that. And I have been looking at all the work the eclectics did since forever. And they had it worked out. It didn't take them long to work out these things.
No.
And in fact, when you think about another natural medicine principle was doctor is teacher, which is actually what the word doctor means. We're teachers. And what that means is that all of these things, that the secrets to unlocking health are not a mystery. They're actually quite easy. The difficult part is educating people about it and then supporting and motivating and inspiring them to stay on the right path so that their body can do what it needs to do to get back to a state of balance.
And I'm all for getting the body back into the state of homeostasis or balance. What are some of the challenges that you find getting people to sort of take on some of the things that you're talking about now because they've been so indoctrinated about taking a vitamin, taking a pill? Just the other day, I had a little murmur in my heart. I was getting some tests done and someone said, "Oh, you're probably short of magnesium, you should take some magnesium." And I thought, "Yeah, what food has magnesium that I could just be eating? I eat magnesium. It's in a lot of things." So, what are some of the things that you try to help turn people around? Because that sometimes their mindset can be so concrete and so, like I said, indoctrinated to say that it's all in a pill.
Yeah, this is a very deep problem. And the problem is that people have been confused and hoodwinked into misunderstanding what disease actually is, and that health is out of their control. It's due to some mysterious invisible thing floating in the air, or it's a genetic thing that's passed down. You have no control over it. The only way that you can get some semblance of health is to go to a clinician with a prescription pad or a scalpel, and they are the arbiters of health, and they hold the secrets to unlocking your health, which isn't really health anyway, it's just suppression of symptoms. So people feel powerless. They don't understand that actually the things you need are very, very simple. And a lot of these things are free and very easy to implement into your daily life. But because they have been indoctrinated over their entire life to think otherwise, when you sit them down and explain this to them, they go, no, it couldn't be that simple. This couldn't be possibly the truth. My body couldn't possibly heal itself that easily. So that is the major hurdle that we have to overcome. And I think this has all been done by design because I don't believe nature does disease. Disease is done by men who meddle with the food supply, pollute their environment, live stressful, unnatural lifestyles, are disconnected from nature, disconnected from each other. And we spend all day sitting around in front of technology, not moving our bodies, not getting fresh air, not getting sunlight. No wonder everyone's sick. So, yeah, the answer is very simple. I think, unfortunately, we've just been confused, and it's a lifetime of indoctrination that we have to undo.
And it's so confusing because I have a really good friend who's actually a counselor, and we have these deep conversations quite often, and we talk about power. And every time we have a chat, we walk away feeling empowered. And it is that power comes back to us. I think the power has been taken away from us, and we give the power to the doctor. And this friend I talk to, she doesn't give any of her power away, and she's amazing. With everything that her challenges that she's dealt with in life is comes from a place of empowerment. But we have definitely given the power away to these large people who are making lots of money out of our stupidity, when really it is trusting in there is a divine order. There is the divine that has been orchestrated. We are like, an orchestra. Everything is like, if it's nicely tuned, it plays in harmony, isn't it? These simple things are just like I talk about it in my book, The Holistic Happiness, The Eight Laws of Health, as I said before. And if you violate one of those eight laws, then it wreaks a little bit of havoc in your life. But it's actually common sense. Like, if you're feeling dehydrated, it's not because you need to see a doctor, it's because you probably need to drink a little bit more water. But these things are not taught in schools. The things that they're teaching in schools at the moment is actually blowing my mind away. It's ridiculous. Trying to teach, as a mother, my children about good health, trying to steer them away from lollies is really challenging. They don't understand the repercussions of slapping all sorts of things on their skin or in their hair. I'm trying to teach them that everything that goes into your body or on your skin has to feed you, has to nourish you, it has to provide you some sort of nutrient. But it's ads, it's Instagram, it's Facebook. I mean, how do we band together and try and empower people is what I like to do. I like to come back and ask people, what do you think, and see where they're coming from. I try not to give them the answers. I try to get them to come up with some of the answers. But, how do we empower people? Because some people don't even know what empowerment feels like or even what it looks like anymore.
We have to make things simple. And this is all about what I do is try to simplify health because it's been so confused. One way to simplify it and make it, and look, you can explain this to people, and only those who are willing to learn, only those who are ready in their journey on through their life will hear this and it will make sense and then they'll implement it. So you can talk to your blue in the face to people who aren't ready. It doesn't matter what you say. It's not going to change anything for them. But if we take it really back to basics, really simplify it down. If we think about a plant needs certain things to live. It needs fresh air, water, good soil, food, companionship, sunlight, needs the earth, needs all these essential things. Now, if you take some of these things away, say you don't give it enough water, the plant's going to start to die. So you don't come along and say, what pesticide or herbicide or fungicide or what kind of serious intervention do we need to do here to remedy this problem? All you need to do is give the plant some water. Humans are exactly the same. There are certain things that we must get every single day. And if we don't get them, it's like not giving a plant water. You give the plant water, the problem goes away. You give the human some water, as you said, with a headache, the problem goes away. So this is what we need to do, is to basically do an audit of our life and go, what are the 7, 8, 10, 12, I don't think even there's that many. There's probably 7 or 8, as you've said. 7 or 8 essential things that a human needs. Are you getting them? I'm only getting 5 of them. Okay. Well, now let's implement a plan, a dietary and lifestyle plan, to make sure you're getting all 8 of them. And then let's see what the body does. We also must then look at what are the things you are getting that you don't need. Maybe you're getting poisoned. Maybe you're literally lathering, as you said, lathering poison on your skin every day. And you're sick and you're getting these skin conditions. Well, let's remove the problem. Let's remove the cause. Give the body what it needs, and then it's fine. Same thing as a plant, same thing as a pet, same thing as any living creature in this realm that we're in. Give them the essential things, take away what they don't need, and those things are well established. They're not a secret. And the body will do the rest. Mother Nature will do the rest.
One of the things that I like working in this natural health industry, or the nat well, what I'm saying is, like, one of the things that I've been taught with the Bowen therapy is that when we talk about the nutrition and, things that are going on in their life, and then we do a treatment, and then we ask them to go away within 7 days to 10 days, then come back, or let's chat. A lot of the time, like, clients will expect a change straight away. But because of the way it's set up, we'll say, well, let's give it 7 days. We give that allowance because it takes time for your body to actually restore. We're taking away things that, you shouldn't be perhaps having that's causing you harm. And we're putting in things that are actually going to help restore some of the body, like extra water, extra food, extra rest. And so it takes a little time for the body to rebalance and to come back into that, health and well-being, to rejuvenate. So it does take a little time. And I think a lot of the problem is today is that we just want to swipe like a iPad screen, and everything has to be done instantly. If we're not fixed tomorrow, then something's wrong. But the way the body heals itself is amazing. I mean, I've seen people come in with sore shoulders, or injuries, and it's healed things in other parts of their body because, the knee or, the jaw, or just the hormone imbalance was causing a lot of these problems. So I think time and patience, because Mother Nature didn't just grow the plant overnight. I know we can do it in a lab with some extra chemicals and things, but true healing does take time. It's kind of a journey, isn't it? It's wisdom in that, it's the little things that we do each day. And I don't think you can buy wisdom. It's something that you have to sort of work at, isn't it? It's the little
Yeah,
habits.
that's right. So what most people are dealing with is chronic disease. So you don't get a chronic disease overnight. It takes time. You've got to earn it. You can't go away and eat one burger one night and wake up the next morning and be disappointed that you're not morbidly obese. It takes time to get that way. So therefore, it also takes time to reverse it. Takes time, I go and smoke one cigarette. Oh, I don't have lung cancer yet. Why not? Because it takes time. Yeah, it takes time to do the damage, and then it takes time to undo the damage. So this is Hering's law of cure, where it's 3 months of healing, 3 to 6 months of healing for every year that you've been sick. So if someone's been sick for 5 years, you're going to need a minimum of 15 months to reach homeostasis. Doesn't mean you're not healing during that time, but it's going to take at least 15 months to get to a almost perfect state of health.
And it's the little things We do each day. Like I'm quite a very structured person. I use my time very wisely, and I think, well, I've got an hour, and what am I going to use my time, or what am I going to waste my time on? And I'm very careful and selective of where I put my time. You know, and sometimes I do get pulled into things that aren't really important, and I think, you know, and I'm always check making a check, but it's very important, like I said, is what we do to set us up for the day. Like every morning I actually like to go for a walk or a run, rain, hail or shine, if I can, because that sets me up for the day. I've done my exercise, the day goes by, and then you've forgotten to do those really simple things. Like I start the day with a glass of water, sometimes with a little lemon juice in it to, you know, help just kick the liver off if I need to. But it's just those little things that sets us up for the day that becomes, you know, a stepping stone to good health. It's not just like I'm going to drink a glass of water today and nothing happened. It's the little, that's, you know, true wisdom. It's the step by step. It's a path, isn't it, that we do. Now, I just wanted to ask you about the vitamins. There's a whole big industry in vitamins. In fact, I know for a fact that one of the owners of the chemists, large chemists, have sworn that they would not even touch one of their products in the chemists, their own products. So, can you give us a bit of a breakdown and your share your wisdom about vitamins? Because I know that you were talking about it when you were teaching and that things weren't aligning. So, what's going on with this vitamin industry, and do vitamins really help? And are there any experiments that have been that actually exists on vitamins? Because I know a lot of people who are into compounding and compound vitamins and get them made overseas and all sorts of things. So yeah, let's just talk about a bit about vitamins.
Yeah, this is a huge topic. It really is. For most of, well, for basically all of my professional career, I was the golden boy promoting these things, talking about them, teaching the nutritional biochemistry, working at pharmaceutical companies and product companies, and then alongside them, promoting them. I developed a course on nutritional compounding. I did it all. And then I realized actually it's all a big sham.
Wow.
So we have again been confused that there are things called nutritional vitamin deficiency diseases. That scurvy, beriberi, pellagra are caused by a deficiency of something. And from that, we have then erroneously believed that we are lacking things and we need to isolate those things from foods and give them to people to reverse the disease. Now, I've looked at this for a number of years, and what I think is going on is that they're not deficiency diseases at all. They're actually toxicity diseases. And when you look at how they isolated so-called vitamins from food, they never demonstrated it. They never proved it. All they did was mix things together. They got a final product, gave it to people with scurvy, for example, and the scurvy went away. And I said, well, this is the thing that's in that fruit that's lacking. And we're going to call that vitamin C. And scurvy is a deficiency of vitamin C. When I think all it was done was they took a food, they meddled with it, they added lots of things to it, manipulated it to create a drug. And that drug, which is, you know, this is how a lot of drugs are made, is you're trying to remove one thing from a plant. They say they're doing this with food. They're taking vitamin C away. I don't actually think they're doing that. But then creating a drug in disguise, calling it a vitamin, people take it. It suppresses their symptoms. They feel better and they take these supplements forevermore. Now, people think that. Well, a lot of people don't want to take drugs. I'd rather have an alternative to a drug, a healthy alternative. I'll get a vitamin. Now, it just so happens that 99% of all the vitamins that are made in this world come from a handful of pharmaceutical companies. So the very people who are making the drug are also making the alternative, and they're making it in a very, very similar way that they're making drugs. These vitamins are synthetic. They're made from petrochemicals and they use heavy metal reagents and things like acetone and formaldehyde and a range of toxic substances that people dare put in their bodies to create these things called vitamins. And then people take them hand over fist because they assume that it's giving them good health. And in fact, we don't need any of that. All we need is good food. And we don't need drugs that have, or vitamins that have been disguised as drugs. We don't need these things. Again, our understanding has been completely confused. When people hear this, it's so far from their understanding of reality that they dismiss it. That how could there possibly not be a deficiency, vitamin deficiency disease? And all it takes is to look back at the foundational science. There's been many experiments that have disproven the theory of vitamin deficiencies, human experiments. And there is no possible way that you can treat a deficiency of whole real food deficiency, with a synthetic substance that's been made in a lab. You cannot do it. So that's the premise in a nutshell.
And do you think the body, I mean, with kinesiology, but do you think the body actually recognizes some of these vitamins as what they say they are? So if you're taking, say, the vitamin C, and the body takes the vitamin C, is it really recognizing it as vitamin C, as opposed to if you just had an orange, it would say, well, that's an orange. I know what to do with the orange. I know how to digest it. But when it gets a pill, is the body really saying, that's vitamin C. I know what to do with it. Or is it kind of freaking out a bit and saying, well, I'm just going to store you in some organ or tissue there for another day until I know what to do with this vitamin?
I'm not convinced that a thing called vitamin C exists. I don't think there is a thing in a fruit or a vegetable called vitamin C that goes into the body and then the body utilizes that. I think the way food is working is completely different to how we've been told. All of this stuff in nutritional biochemistry textbooks, I think we're completely off the mark. So yeah, we don't have to get into why I think they're working in other ways, but they've never demonstrated the existence of these compounds in a food. Never. It's never been done. Minerals are different because we can show a mineral exists in nature. You can walk up to some calcium carbonate rock and you can go, here's the calcium carbonate. It's in nature. It exists. It's real. You can't do that with a vitamin. You can't do that with a lot of these invisible compounds in a food. And even if I'm not right about any of this stuff, there's also the premise of holism and synergy. But even if there were these individual compounds called vitamins in food, they're not intended to work in isolation. They are intended to work together alongside all of the other hundreds of thousands of so-called compounds in food to interface with the body. That is the way that the body is nourished, with the whole food. You can't nourish it by taking a single nutrient or vitamin, giving it to the body and expecting it to work. So an analogy that people might resonate with is if you have a fine watch, there's lots of cogs in the back of that watch, and they all work together to turn the hands on the face of the watch. Now, a biochemist might come along and say, what is this? What is the compound in the food that's doing the job? Well, that's like saying, what is the cog in the back of the watch turning the hands? It's not any one of them, it's all of them working together. So, much like you can't take one cog out of that watch and go and put it in another watch that has no cogs and expect it to turn, if you remove one cog out of one watch and it's just missing one, the rest of those cogs won't work. Yeah. So you have to have the whole thing. You have to have the whole food. You can't meddle with it and give it to the body and expect it to work. So there are many, no matter what way you look at it, whether or not these things exist or not. And again, I can't find paper that shows that these things exist. If they exist or not, it doesn't really matter. What matters is Mother Nature has given us the things that nourish a human body, and this is what we're meant to eat.
And it makes sense. I mean, if you think of eggs, it's got pretty much what they say, most of the nutrients that you've got. But if you just pull out, like, say, the vitamin C or vitamin B from the egg and go, that's what you need. But to make that egg a chicken, it needs everything to make that, not just the vitamin B. So I kind of get what you're saying because they're kind of counteract. It's like a domino effect, you do need all those things working, and it's like the orchestra. They're all playing their own sort of note, and it keeps it in harmony. And that's really important. And it's funny because that I had for my biochemistry run by a biochemist, I think last year, and we did 14 tests, and we worked out everything that I was deficient in. And apparently, I had lots of things a matter. You can find lots of things wrong with it. And at the end of the day, it ended up making me more stressed that how can I get this biochemistry perfected? And the result was that I would have to take these compounds to compensate for all these things. And I just, what made me actually feel more anxious was the fact that I have to be dependent on these compounds to make me better. And then I bumped into a friend who was actually so happened to be a biochemist, and she said, you can heal yourself with just food. And she said, I just can all that. And it just made me begin to wonder, why are we doing all these tests? And whether these tests are they statistically just done on an average? Like, is the true vitamin D level really 50, or is it really meant to be 200? Are we meant to, what is the actual true level of some of these tests that they're telling us that we should have as a human being? And if we're all individual, are we meant to have that much vitamin D or not enough vitamin D? I don't know. Like, I was starting to wonder and question about some of the things that they've been pushing on us.
Most of the blood tests that are done, and I would dare say the large majority, I don't want to say all, but the large majority of functional tests have never been validated. They've never been validated. So they're pumping out all these facts and figures, scaring people based on nothing, based on assumption, based on theory. They have not been validated in the real world. They haven't been validated against what's really going on in the body and scaring people. Now, when you do a blood test or a functional pathology test, we look at that as something that the body is doing wrong. So when something's low or high, oh, the body's doing something wrong. What if it's actually the body doing something right? So when we see this marker that's too low, we go, oh, we better boost it up. We better suppress this marker because it's too high. That's not the way the body works. The body works by changing and adapting. This is called allostasis. So it changes and adapts to inputs in its external environment, to the air you're breathing, to the amount of sunlight, to the food you're eating, to social inputs, exercise, all these kinds of things. And it fine-tunes things inside the body to maintain balance. So when you go and do a test and you see something out of whack, it's not out of whack at all. It's the body doing what it needs to do to maintain some resemblance of homeostasis when it's not getting what it needs or it's getting something that it doesn't need. So I used to be right into all this testing stuff. Again, I was. This is what I did in clinic. This is what I taught at university for over a decade. Was all the blood tests, all the functional tests. I was the guy who everyone went to for this stuff. I ran workshops and taught clinicians all around Australia, and I realized that it was all nonsense. It's all wrong. It doesn't tell us what we think it's telling us. And we are not going to get the answer that we seek by going more and more looking more and more myopically at taking some blood from a human being, meddling with it in a lab, running some tests on it, and then extrapolating that to what's really going on in the human body. We're not going to find the answers that we seek by doing that. We find the answers by, as I said, going back to those basic seven, eight things that the human body needs, working out what they need, giving it to them, and then removing what they don't. The body will do the rest. The test is really inconsequential. It's not a requirement to achieve good health.
It's so backwards. It's like, you know, we're going to these medical experts. We're getting 15 minutes, if that, 10 minutes or 5 minutes with these consults, and then we base our health on that 5 minutes. I mean, that is not true, really true health. It's not really bringing us back into balance. It's not doing anything in those 5 to 10 minutes that we trust this system, you know, with all our heart, all our soul. In fact, we just think that if we go to one of these medical experts, that they're going to fix us. And we have no empowerment to think that we can actually make lifestyle changes, that we are so empowered to be able to do that if we have someone to actually walk the path with us and kind of be our friend and help us make those steps that we can actually get well. Because it actually scares me about some of these diagnoses that are coming out, you know. I won't say things that maybe some people really don't have these conditions, and they're, you know, pumping, say, chemotherapy and all these radiation and things into people. And I'm kind of not 100% convinced that some of these people have some of these diseases.
I will say this. Clinicians, particularly, but patients are under this belief that the body cannot heal unless I do the test. I need to find out what's going on to be able to treat properly. Our access to these tests is relatively recent, particularly with natural medicine practitioners. We didn't always have access to using blood tests and functional pathology. These things are relatively new. Yet, if you look through all the eclectic and traditional natural medicine texts, even to the 70s and the 80s, like go and look at Dorothy Hall's work, for example, the grandmother or the mother of natural medicine in Australia. She didn't have access to vitamin supplements. She didn't have access to fancy functional pathology tests or blood tests. Yet, how was she able to heal thousands upon thousands upon thousands of people clinically? And then also help tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of people heal through her work, through her education, through her books, without ever doing a single blood test, ever. We don't need these things. We forget that. We forget that the body can do what it needs to do without us doing these tests. And the other thing that I will say is, again, a lot of people may not resonate with this, some will. I don't think there are thousands or hundreds of different diseases. There is only one dis-ease. There's
Stress.
one. And that dis-ease is the body in a state of allostasis. And allostasis is the body in an active state of returning to balance. So what actually happens is the damage happens first to the body. And then once the damage has happened, the body responds. And it goes into a healing response. And that healing response is allostasis. You could essentially equate a state of dis-ease to being in a state of healing. If you're in a chronic state of dis-ease, I have a chronic disease, it means that your body is just in a state of chronic healing because it's trying to heal, but it either doesn't have what it needs or it's getting what it doesn't. This is. It's so simple. The entire field of health is built upon this premise that it's hard, it's difficult, it's unachievable, it's confusing, it's out of your control, it's genetic, it's due to an invisible thing floating in the air. It's because the body's doing something wrong. It's so far removed from the truth that when you do work out what the truth really is, and you explain it to people, they don't believe it because it's so simple. But
And
as I said, this
simplicity.
is exactly what our forefathers knew in the field of natural medicine.
And this is why it's so important to teach this to our children, because otherwise it's going to be forgotten. They're going to think this is the way of life. Like, you know, the moment something's wrong, It's like, quick, got to see a doctor, got to see a doctor. I mean, I was thinking back, I was having this conversation with a friend of mine who, she was telling me that the old day remedies that they used to have is just get some garlic and put it on your chest. And, I'm thinking, God, when I had my children, I felt like every day I was at the chemist getting some stupid, silly little something to make them go to the toilet when it really was probably the formula that I was feeding them, that it was off the shelf of the chemist. And until that was when I finally got into natural health and realized I threw out all those things. But and I thought all these things that I had to do to think that my children, and I thought my mum didn't do any of this. She just gave us a glass of water, a bit of honey, and go to bed, get some rest, and you'll be better tomorrow morning. And even those words were comforting in itself, but I didn't think we were rushing off to the doctors every day. Like I'd say, bring back the 70s and 80s. Health protocol is probably coming back to basics, is where I, the basics where I really believe that I'm pushing for at the moment. But I really want to talk about your book because this is really important. Very considering that the last 3 years has been all built around a scary virus, which is very interesting. New book is called Can You Catch a Cold? So where did this come from, and what made you inspire you to bring out a book on this topic? Because it's really fascinating.
Early 2020, I heard some doctors talking about the fact that the virus, let's just call it the virus, that is responsible for this pandemic has not been isolated. And they introduced this concept that germs don't cause disease. Now, I was res very receptive to what they were saying because, in fact, I got taught this in my undergraduate degree in like 2000 and five, six, whenever in the early days of my degree. So we were still getting taught this in the natural medicine colleges. They don't teach that anymore.
No.
And I dismissed all that when I first heard it at college. I was like, nah, it's nonsense because science has proven that germs do cause disease. So for 15 years, I thought nothing of it. And as soon as I heard these doctors saying, no, actually, look, there's this other way of looking at it, I immediately resonated with that. And I thought, okay, if I'm going to go out on a limb here, because I've been educating for a long time and I want to find the truth and I want to educate on the truth. If I'm going to go out on a limb here and start talking about this, I better be sure that it's true and correct. So what I did was went back to the foundational experiments where they tried to make healthy people sick by exposing them to sick people and their bodily fluids. And I started finding hundreds of papers, not just for the cold and flu, but for all infectious diseases like chickenpox and measles and mumps and whooping cough. In the early 1900s, probably through to the 1950s, there were many, many of these experiments being done, and they never proved that they're contagious. They never proved that they're caused by a germ. So I had all these papers, and word was getting out that I was doing this research. And a guy called Roman Bistrianic, who wrote a book called Dissolving Illusions, which is a very good book. If anyone hasn't read that, you should. He got in contact with me and said, hey, look, mate, I really think you need to write a book with all this data that you've got. I thought, okay. I was actually in the process of writing another book at the time. I thought this is far more important. And that set me on the journey. So that was little bit over 2 years ago now, I think, when I started that. And I've been writing and researching 12 to 16 hours a day for every day for 2 years. And just the other day, I hit the go button, and the book will be ready for purchase very soon.
Wow, that's amazing. So, can you catch a cold? Can you catch a coronavirus? I mean, we saw there's one coronavirus. There's not just one coronavirus, but can you catch a cold, or is it something that's been actually injected into us, or is it, what is it? It's a very controversial time at the moment, but I like to stick to some, well, I'll say facts, but some basic common sense. Like, this whole schmuzzle is that one day you can go somewhere and then the next day you can be tracked and traced and you can just catch a virus the very next day. I don't think it works like that. You can't go somewhere to McDonald's or to Safeway and then the very next day you catch a virus. It's just, how can that be possible? So can you really catch a cold?
Not in the way we think. We can be manipulated psychologically to develop signs and symptoms that we would associate with being a cold, and that can spread like a mind virus, or they call this mass psychogenic illness. So you can actually trick people into developing the symptoms that you want them to develop by creating a huge marketing and fear campaign.
And
That's possible.
some tests to prove it.
Yes, this is well established. This is well established in the literature. There is so much evidence on mass psychogenic illness and the nocebo effect, and even human experiments where they told people they were exposing them to germs. The people believed they were being exposed to germs, manifested the disease. And then the next day, the researchers come into the room and say, "Gotcha. We didn't expose you to a germ.
It's
We
witchcraft.
exposed you to saline.
It's
We gave you
definitely,
salt water."
it's that's witchcraft. It's definitely witchcraft. I talk about this with my girlfriend all the time, and we both debunk and say we don't believe in the whole schmozzle, being that. And she reminds me every time, like, if you're gonna believe you're catching a cold, you're gonna get it. But she doesn't believe in it, and she's never hardly done since I've known her got sick. But then there's, other people who are so fearful that can I get it from the touching a surface and can it live for 3 days if I go back into that place or if I go over to their house? I've had a few colds. I don't usually get sick. I had one last year, a very bad, not a very good one. But you know what? I actually felt better after it. So it was actually a kind of a really good detox. I don't know where it came from. It just suddenly hit me. Maybe I was a bit run down and hadn't been eating properly and just thought, right, this is the time where I actually have to reevaluate myself, my nutrition. Am I getting enough sleep? What do I need to change in my life? Is what how I looked at it. So yeah, it's kind of a very interesting concept. That's yeah, so I'm very excited. I'm actually really keen to read your book. I've seen some of your studies that you've actually shared in the very beginning, which actually got me very intrigued to what you were sharing because I was quite aligned with some of the things that you were saying. I did a lot of research at the beginning of 220, and there's something that didn't seem right for me in the whole just everything. And I've never seen so many people unwell, but then even people who are having the vaccinations, even putting that they're dangerous is actually putting it out there too for me. So, I think it's all mind over matter, a lot of it.
Yeah, mind over matter. And the fact, as we were talking about before, that there are no different diseases. There is a state of imbalance where the body's returning to homeostasis. So the symptoms that we associate with the cold or flu are not the disease. The coughing is not the disease. The sniffling and the sneezing and the snot and the fever and the lethargy and the malaise, they're not the disease. They are the symptoms. And symptoms are the cure. They are the answer to the problem. So what you're experiencing isn't a disease. You're experiencing a purge. You're experiencing a detox. You're experiencing an acute healing. It's a
Crisis or
healing crisis, essentially what it is. But we've been tricked. We've been confused into viewing the symptoms as the problem. And I go into all of this in the book, but one way in which we think we might catch a cold, well, there's many different ways. I talk about all these in the book, but there's two essential big hard-hitting ways that it might work. One is that we're brought up through childhood, utterly convinced because people in authority tell us, like our parents, doctors, teachers, that when you're close to someone who's coughing and sneezing, you will catch their germs and you'll get sick. Now, one day, inevitably, you will be around someone who's sick and you'll get sick, and it will confirm in your mind that it's possible. So then, anytime you're close to someone who's sick, you may very well induce that illness through a nocebo effect because you believe it utterly, with wholeheartedly, that it's true. The other way, and it's probably a combination of these things, is that when you're close to someone who's sick, it's not the germs that you're being exposed to, it's a common environmental exposure. So things in the air, things in the environment, changes in humidity, changes in temperature have been shown to induce changes in the respiratory tract that elicit these symptoms and signs that we know as a cold or flu. And when these changes in temperature and humidity occur, people who have been exposed to, say, more particulate matter, more pollution in the air, that builds up in their lungs. And the change in humidity is Mother Nature's signal to say, hey, look, if you've got a lot of stuff in your lungs, now is the time to bring it out. So we would say that person's got low immunity because there might be someone living in the same house as them who doesn't get sick. We'd say that person's got strong immunity when in fact it's just that that person has been exposed to less pollution, less toxic load. They haven't been as stressed. They've been exercising better. The body's been able to constantly detoxify throughout the last 12 months, whereas the other person, that hasn't necessarily happened. So when that signal happens with the change in humidity, they need to undergo a detoxification response or a purge. The other person doesn't. So again, we've confused a natural cyclical response with a germ, with a virus. And humanity has been at the mercy of this idea for the last 4 years, but actually much longer. We've been at the mercy of this idea for 100 years. So slowly, I think this idea is permeating the minds of many people. Might seem like a foreign concept to others, but hopefully what I put out in my book, 1400 references in there, I've tried to dot my I's and cross my T's. Hopefully it will give people something different, a different perspective to look at this issue. It may change their mind, it may not. I'm not there to change people's minds. I'm there to present the information as I see it, and then people can make up their own minds.
Well, the thing is that the way that we've been going is sort of got us in this mess. And, we have to do something to change our perspective because it is a deep programming. I mean, like you said, to saying that we're always looking for someone or something to blame. Like, someone gave that to me. Someone did that to me. I caught that because, oh, it's this. It's always the power is outside of someone else has done it to me. Rather than, looking at what we can do to change, and you're right. Like, the moment we say, oh, she's got low immunity, she's got this, there's always something wrong with us. Rather than, well, what is actually happening that's right that we can look at? So, and it is a deep programming. I remember when I was growing up, I mean, colds and flus were very rare, very rare. Sometimes, I don't think as a child I had many colds and flus as my children did, and I was very surprised. I mean, my mum used to tell us to let the children run around on the floor and eat all the germs as possible. Just play. But now you can't even go to a coffee shop without putting on a mask because you might get coughed on. Although it's not nice if someone coughs on you. But it's just, it's kind of becoming a little bit ridiculous of how scared we are of getting sick.
Yeah, fear plays a big part. If you eliminate fear, you eliminate the disease. You eliminate the disease. Everything that I'm talking about is not new information.
No.
I haven't just plucked this out of the ether. I've gone to the old literature. They spoke about all of this in the old medical textbooks, in the journals, in the most prominent medical journals in the world. I won't say the names of them, but this was all well known. This is not a secret. We had
No.
just detached ourselves from this understanding. We've forgotten this information, and it's time that we reconnect and remember where we left off, say 120 years ago, before this became a so-called proven fact. Because our ancestors and forefathers worked this out over millennia, and this was an understanding held by all human beings across the world for centuries. And they even named a cold, because they understood that the symptoms that you get when you get exposed to cold weather is a cold. They named it after the thing that caused it. The influenza is also derived from the influence of the cold. So our forefathers knew it. They told us the secrets by naming the cause of the problem after the cause of the problem, the disease after the cause of the problem. So, yeah, it's all it is. We've just forgotten. It's time to remember. All of the answers to the questions we seek are already out there. We just got to go and look for them. And that's what I've done with this book. No one's got time to go back and look through the old medical literature. So I've done that for people in Can You Catch a Cold?
That's wonderful. And it's a nice remembrance and a reminder to come back to the old, good old fashioned values, I guess. So thank you so much for your time.
And you're still shining. Look within, look within. Do you see the light again? You're still shining.